You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to this week's edition of To the Journey. And this week we have an awesome show for you because we're going to go through our season two marathon, the five episodes that we cannot go without. And Tristan, I have been dying all week to hear your picks. So let's just jump right in.
Yeah, the thing is, you and I both love season two. Like, out of all seven seasons, this is probably one of our favorite seasons. I don't know if I could say if I have a favorite season, but this would definitely be in the running. And so yeah. I'm wondering how much overlap we're going to have, but we'll find out as we go.
Indeed. Yeah, I don't know if I would say season two is my favorite, but like you said, I don't know if I necessarily have a favorite. I definitely have standouts from every season. It's like picking your favorite child. Well, they're all a little bit different, and so you can't compare them. You just can't.
Yes, I think with me, okay, I can't remember how you feel about this episode, and I feel like this episode gets a lot of flack, but I always watch it in my rewatch, and this would be a perfect starter for me. In a Saturday afternoon where we sit down to watch five episodes in a row, and that would be Elogium.
Ooh, okay. No overlap yet. Tell us why you like Elogium.
I love the character of Kes. I love the development of her. I love the innocence at first that the childlike curiosity, and then that develops into a very kind of wise beyond her years. And then she turns into a being who's the most powerful person on the ship, I mean, with her mental prowess. And right. I just love her arc. I love the character. And so I'm a sucker for Kes episodes. I mean, there's been some great ones. There have been some not so great ones. And this one I like because I like the fact that she is away from home. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have any family. And this is the first time that it's really hitting her. It's where she's going through a life change, and she's like, yeah, I need my parents. I need my father. I need my mother. I need my society. And I am so alien to this crew that nobody knows how to deal with it, not even the doctor. I like when Star Trek shows us something that is truly foreign to us. This type of reproduction, this type of birth,
yes,
it's just unlike anything that we've seen in Star Trek and unlike anything that we can relate to.
Yes, it is definitely off the wall. I mean, I've never seen any other species that where they carry the child on their backs.
Yeah, they carry the child on their back in a sack.
Yeah.
And in order to procreate, she gets like these mustard hands. And
yeah.
She has to lock hands with Neelix. And she can only do this once, which, you know, mathematically doesn't make any sense.
No,
but
not at all.
I'm one of those few people who actually liked the relationship between Neelix and Kes. And so I like the dynamic where he loves her. He loves her like nobody else. But the thing is, he's still wary where, do I want to have kids? Do I have anything to teach kids? You know, am I still trying to sow my wild oats or whatever, plant my wild oats, whatever the phrase goes. Whatever you do with the oats, am I not done doing them?
Right. When you're getting married, it doesn't matter, right? So we're beyond this.
Yeah, and so I love the conversation that Neelix has with Tuvok. I thought that was a nice early on relationship moment, whether
yes.
It was, you know, like they don't have a great relationship as it goes on, but they have something.
Yeah.
And so I just, all those little moments and just the overall alienness of it, I thought is great Star Trek.
Okay, those are fantastic reasons. And I do love the fact in Elogium that they actually discuss having children aboard the ship. Like, it's a real possibility. We are going to have to prepare for this, And then at the end, of course, we find out baby Naomi is on her way. So that part is really cool. The whole thing with the way Kes carries children, the mating ritual and all that, it is just a little, like, it doesn't make any sense to me at all, especially the whole having one child thing. Shouldn't the Okampa be extinct then?
Yes.
Because if you're living for 9 years, you should be having litters, okay, instead of
like,
one.
Yeah. Like, not only, like, even if you take out the age portion of it, just the fact that two people can only produce one.
You're reducing your population in half every generation.
Every single generation. It just doesn't make
sense. So, does not compute. That is actually the primary reason why I did not pick Elogium, but I agree that it's a fun episode.
So picky, Shard.
Darn, I know, logistics. Oh,
this is like the truck in space all over again.
Here we go again.
And speaking of which, this was actually supposed to be a part of season one, like the 37.
Yes. Yep. Yes, it was filmed with the season one block, but aired in season two. Yes, it did.
All right. So, Char, I spoke for a long time on my first pick. I want to hear your first pick.
All right. Well, I think we're going to be speaking for quite a while on this one because I know you love it. And it's Twisted.
Yeah, I didn't pick that one because I wanted you to have it.
Oh, it's okay. I'm glad that I picked it now because I almost gave it to you. And if you wouldn't have put it in your list, my head would have imploded.
Yeah, that would have been that would have been a rough time.
It really would have. We would have to stop the recording and do it all over again because that just would not float. But lucky for us, I did put it on my list, and I love the fact that this is a different kind of episode. It is pure science fiction. We don't know what this is. We don't know why it's doing it. All we know is that it's disrupting the ship, and they have no choice by the end of it to ride it out. I love that.
Yeah.
It's so different from fire phasers and, you know, flash the photon torpedoes, action, battle. No, this is very, dude, I'm scared, and there's nothing we can do about it, and here we go. We've got to leave it up in the air and see what happens. Now, you don't want that to happen every week. But the fact that they did it once was awesome. Loved it, loved it, loved it. It revealed so many cool little tender moments. I mean, it kind of showed you who matters to whom in that very ending moment right before they're about to be taken. Like, even the small gesture Tuvok puts on Janeway's shoulder shows their bond. Tom and Harry, you know, they're kind of asking you, are you afraid? Yeah, dude, I am. And all we needed was an I love you, man. To really make that complete, but we were close enough. Yeah, I just absolutely love the character moments like that. Yes, they were wandering around the ship for half of the episode, and it was sort of useless, but it wasn't. It was character development, and I'm a sucker for character episodes. So why do you like it?
Before I talk about why I like it, because I love this episode, didn't they add scenes of them wandering around because they're like, oh crap, we're short this week?
I don't know if they did that or not. I haven't read Memory Alpha on this in a long time.
Cannot remember. I'm pretty sure that they did, where they ran just under and they're like, oh crap, we need more wandering. So the fact that you felt like it was a little bit of a waste of time, because it literally was, they were wasting time,
right? Yeah, if it was filler, it makes perfect sense then that that's how it turned out and why. Sure.
Well, I'm with you on this one, because I believe that the little moments is what makes this episode, and also just the overall story arc is, like you said, it's great science fiction. It's an anomaly, and I know Voyager gets blamed for using the anomaly a lot, but I thought it was great. It was something they could not fight, and so they had to give up at the end. And the only way to go through it was to do nothing. And at the end, just their databanks were full of information,
which unfortunately we never found out what happened to it. Did they ever use it? They never said anything about it ever again.
I think it was probably just one of those situations where they're like, hey, we learned something new about an alien race, but it's not really going to help us get home or anything like that.
Well, how do they know if they didn't go through the data? I mean, there might be star charts in there.
Sure, they went through it, Char. They just, like, how boring of an episode would that be? They're like, okay, here's a listing of geographical data that they sent us. And
it
basically
no.
Reading their Wikipedia page, you know, it's
right.
Just...
Yeah, I don't want an episode about this. That would be awful. But maybe even a throwaway line like, oh my god, we combed through all 40 gigaquads of that data or whatever the number was, And Harry's just exhausted at the beginning of some episode, and he needs to relax, and he's hanging out with Tom. That would have been fine.
I think they handled it fine because they inferred that, of course, they're going to go through it. But like you said, the moments were great, and I loved it. This is the first real time that we see how jealous Neelix can get, and that's a recurring theme. And even though it's not something we like to see, it is something that's important to the show and important to the relationship. And that, for some reason, my absolute favorite moment in this episode is when they say, Neelix, Chakotay, is that fine if Neelix goes with you? And he kind of he scratches his ear and just kind of puts his hands down and goes and just nods like, yeah, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, he has no choice. He knows he's screwed. He's got to go along with this. Yeah, I'm just going to say yeah and go along with it because why fight it?
Exactly.
Yes, that is a great moment, too. Yes. All right, we're on to round two. What's your pick?
Round two. I might be jumping around in order just a little bit, because I feel like with a lot of these in season two, you don't need to go in order. If you kind of take out the whole Seska storyline, you don't need to watch them in order. It's kind of like TOS. My round two pick would be Death Wish.
Oh, okay. First overlap. Here we go. That is my second pick as well. So, kick us off. Why do you like it?
I love Q episodes. I talk about them all the time on the show, and all of you know that I have the fan collective DVDs where it was the Borg episodes, the time travel episodes, the Klingon episodes, and of course the Q episodes. And I would watch those on loop like crazy until I got the full seasons. Just, I connect with Q. I think he's a great character. I think he's lively. I think he's fun. I think he thrived on Voyager. I think he found a new home. I think once we all left TNG, we're like, we have this great character. What are we going to do? Oh, crap. He has no chemistry whatsoever with Sisko. So let's see if he
got punched in the face.
Yeah. Let's see if he has chemistry with Janeway. And they did, and they do. And the idea of, you know, seeing the continuum. I mean, we have wanted to see the continuum since the first episode in 1987.
Yes. And it happens in this episode.
And it finally happens. And not only do we see it once, we get to see it twice in Voyager. But this is the first time. I'm not trying to segregate fans at all, because we're all Star Trek fans, whether you like one movie or one show or all of them. We're all Star Trek fans. But true. A lot of the times, I feel like people who fell in love with the TV show in the 80s and 90s, you know, they like the courtroom aspect of Star Trek. They like the debates, and they like the people screaming at each other across the table about ethical issues more so than the phaser battles. But no, I'm not saying that's bad, because I love me some phaser battles, and I love Abrams Trek, so I'm not trying to piss anybody off. But
yeah.
I'm just saying that this is classic style Trek, where it's an ethical dilemma delivered in a sci-fi lens, and we haven't seen that in a long time. And I feel like this is a right up there with Drumhead, in my opinion.
Oh, and, totally. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's why I love it. Why do you love it?
I love it for the fact that, yes, it is a tough ethical dilemma. They take on a very controversial subject and punch it in the face. I mean that in the way of where they handled it just beautifully. I thought it was fantastic. Because it says a lot. They didn't have a prescribed, oh, you should do this instead of this. It's Star Trek, where you have to decide for yourself based on the events that happen. And they cover all the bases. We get a cameo from Will Riker. Q is always fun. I don't know if there is any Q episode that I don't really enjoy, because he's at least at the very least fun. And even if it's not that great of an episode, he's still entertaining to watch. He's a goofball.
See, yeah, that's the thing, is that even if it's not a great episode, John DeLancey is entertaining.
Totally.
He is going to show you a good time, whether even though you're rolling your eyes at the plot.
Which sometimes happens, yes. But you're still in for a fun ride. Yeah, for sure. And also, I liked watching the Q Continuum as well. I love the fact that they designed it as just this very lonely way station in the middle of nowhere. That is perfect for the Continuum. If you've always been there, yeah, you would be bored.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And I love the existential questions that it raised. And I love that he did not live a happy life. He did not go on to be successful as a mortal. No, he killed himself.
Right. But he did it. It was his choice.
Yeah.
It wasn't Janeway telling him he could or Q saying that he couldn't. It was his choice.
Right. And it just, I don't feel like you normally see that on television.
No.
And this was definitely something that, you know, Star Trek is known for, where they make the hard decisions and they show us the harsh realities. Mm-hmm. And doesn't it feel like Q has been in Voyager more than just three episodes? But that's all he was in.
I know, right? Yeah, it kind of does. Like seasons two and three, where he makes an appearance in each season, feels like he is around more. And then he comes back in season seven. That space in between, yeah, he's definitely missing. I wish they would have actually done a little more with Q on Voyager, because he is a good fit. He and, well, I think what makes it is the fact that John Delancey and Kate Mulgrew are friends in real life. Their chemistry works so well on screen. I could watch those two as Q and Janeway all day.
This is one of the best episodes in Voyager, not just season two.
I agree. It is fantastic.
Well, since we tied, do you want to go ahead and start up round three?
Okay, I can do that. Let's see if you chose what I chose, and that is Deadlock. We've raved before about why we like Deadlock, so I'll simplify this. Be very quick about it. Two Voyagers, two Janeways. Ballsy Janeway blows up an incredibly... Ballsy Janeway blows the ship up in this incredibly calm demeanor, which is just badass. Harry dies, but he still lives. Naomi dies, and she still lives. I mean, what's not to love about this entertaining hour of television? It is just great.
It's one of my favorites, and I watch it all the time, and it's just every single moment, you know, life and death and just... The what will happen next? We don't know which crew is going to die, because you know one is going to die. Are they going to merge together? You know, is Harry's gone? Is he really gone? You know, it's just
yeah. It's not very often you see a main character die off, and yes, they did sort of press the reset button on him, but they went there.
But I thought it was a great idea. I mean, I felt like yes, it's a reset button on him, but it totally makes sense. And Jane, it's just, I love that moment when Janeway looks at Kim and said, go over there. Okay, we're going to die. You're going to survive. You're going to continue on. And he's just like, but Captain, he's like, just do it. You know, it's that moment. I was losing my mind. I was moving around in my seat like, oh God, what's going to happen? And it was just, and I just love that guttural scream that Kim gives when he's in sick bay and he sees the empty bio bed where Naomi's supposed to be. He just screams no, and then he rolls around and shoots a Vidian, and it's I'm getting excited just talking about it.
Well, it's great. I mean, the pacing of this episode is phenomenal. You don't feel like you're watching 45 minutes. It feels like 15. Yeah. And that's when it's a good episode. If you feel like time has passed, or if you feel like time hasn't passed, rather, you're being entertained and you're into it. And that's Deadlock. Yeah, I watch this episode all the time. I don't get tired of it. It's really good. Next pick for you. What have you got?
Well, I like so many episodes in season two, and I'm trying to not just pick the best of season two. I'm trying to pick a good mix of storylines and genres to make a marathon, a five-episode marathon flow pretty well. Because, you know, like if you have a CD mix that's all just one genre or all just Jack Johnson, it's going to be boring as hell. But if you have one song of Jack Johnson, which I believe is all that you can take of Jack Johnson, that is, I think that's good. I think that's a good mix when you just kind of pepper it with stuff. And so I'm not saying this is one of the best episodes of season two, but I think it's right up there, and that is Prototype.
Ah, okay. With the robots.
The robots. I like Prototype not so much for the plot, but for the discourse that goes on between the main robot and B'Elanna. I feel like this is a great B'Elanna episode where she uses her skills and she's forced to use her intellect, like so many people that we've seen in fiction and even seen in real life, where they're forced to do something that they don't want to do, and they're forced to create something that they don't want to create. And but then she starts to think, okay, maybe, you know, maybe I should help these people out. You know, maybe I should help them in their own way to procreate. But, you know, am I playing God? Am I not? And then when she finds out that they're the reason why they killed all of their masters, she stabs it in the chest after she spent those all that time and blood, sweat, and tears to try to create artificial life. And then she's like, no! The arc of her character in that episode is what really makes it for me. And the conversations that she has with him, and also just the sheer fact that they brought up Data. I mean, you have to talk about Data, and I just...
How can you not?
Yeah, I love any cross-reference to Trek anywhere, so I think that's why I chose this episode.
Yeah, you know what really makes this episode for me? Because it's not one of my favorites, it's just okay, but I really do like it when Janeway and B'Elanna are talking about resuscitating this life form and... Do we play God or don't we? I mean, Janeway even says that. Who are we to play God? And so yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love the fact that B'Elanna did this and did not find out the consequences until it was too late. And then, yeah, it's like she had to kill off her Frankenstein, her creation. And yeah, very dramatic. The only reason why this one just kind of falls a little short for me is because it is very close in line, chronologically, in airing order, to Dreadnought, where, again, B'Elanna is fixing a machine.
Yeah.
So it's the same story, although maybe I would say Prototype is better.
I like both of them. I never really thought about that before. But you're right. They are really close in airing order. They could have spread those out just a little bit more. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And that would have made all the difference to me then. And that would have been fine. But for whatever reason, that just kind of put a sour taste in my mouth when the shows aired, and it knocked it down a notch for me. I can't let go of that, apparently.
I can't really complain when we get a B'Elanna episode, except for when it's Muse. So that's, yeah, so you're not going to hear any complaints from me when you get to see a little bit more of B'Elanna Torres. I love the line in here, and let me quote it to you, because so many people talk about this in Voyager, and this is what the kids would call meta. Like Chakotay says, you don't mind if the rest of us give you a little help, do you, Paris? I'd hate to lose another shuttlecraft.
LOL.
Yeah, and Paris goes, your concern for my welfare is heartwarming. I love that they talked about it. They're like, yeah, we're losing, it's only season two and we're losing shuttles.
Well, then the thing is Chakotay ends up wrecking most of them. So that's a fantastic line.
Yes. Bring it on, Char.
All right. My fourth selection is Basics Part 1. Yeah, and we talked a little bit about this last week with Seska and all that. It is the beginning of a fantastic two-parter, and this is actually where the Kazon really do come off as a threat, and they seem halfway intelligent, and I can appreciate that.
Absolutely, yeah. We talked a lot about this episode last week, and you know, there's so many good things to talk about. We mainly talked about the Seska component, but it, you know, this was a well-crafted episode.
It really was. Yeah, it was the perfect build-up to part two, which I thought broke down just beautifully. That is one of my favorite conclusions to a two-parter ever in Star Trek. So this is a nice setup, and I had to pick it. I just did. I love it.
All right. Well, my number four is probably one you have picked, but you might have not picked this one because you knew I was going to pick it.
Okay, bring it.
All right, so my fourth pick is Tuvix.
Okay, I did not pick this because I knew you would.
Exactly.
So I took Twisted, you get Tuvix.
There we go. I think we segregated that nice. You know, what is there more to say about Tuvix? I mean, those of you who are loyal listeners, you know we love this episode. And I've even talked about it on the Delta Quadrant with Matt Hansen. You know, like, it's just, this is a genius episode with a great guest star, a great costume design even.
Oh, and yes, I love his uniform.
I know, I wish they kind of all had something like that. And it's just, again, with the ethical dilemma, I feel like we're choosing a lot of ethical dilemma episodes. And this is what is great about Voyager, is they ask the questions. They don't necessarily answer them, but they ask them. Even they make decisions, don't get me wrong. Janeway made a decision, and a lot of people didn't like it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were fine with it. Like, this is what you got to do as captain. But the thing is, it does not portray it as the right or wrong decision. It's just right. the decision that she made. And that is great Star Trek. That is great storytelling. That is, you decide, viewer, what she should have done or what you would have done in her place.
Yes. And 18 years later, people are still debating the dynamics of this situation on message boards. Like, if you go to the Trek BBS, there is probably a thread on page one for the Voyager section on, was killing off Tuvix ethical? People still talk about it all the freaking time. And yes, it is controversial. Janeway did have to make a decision. And I love the fact that it's not portrayed as right or wrong. It just was. She had to decide. The weight of that had to land on her as the captain. And yeah, what more could you want out of a Star Trek episode?
I feel like this is kind of, I don't want to say it's an exact parallel to Deep Space Nine in the Pale Moonlight, but it's definitely raises the same questions where, was the captain morally justified for taking this action? And do the end justify the means? And those are the same kind of questions that were asked. And people to this day, when it's a DS9 forum, they're talking about In the Pale Moonlight. And when it's a Voyager forum, they're talking about Tuvix. And this is great television. If they're talking about it decades later, it's great television.
Yeah. So whether you like Tuvix or not, it probably made you itch a little bit and you're still riled up about it. And it's great because of that.
Absolutely. Well, what is your final pick? Sure.
All right. So help me if you didn't pick this one. I'll be surprised. So read my mind here. Okay. I have to complete any season two marathon with my favorite relationship or episode, Resolutions.
Crap.
Oh, no. You didn't pick it?
No. I did pick it. But the thing is, I picked that one because I'm like, okay, surely she was going to pick something else, but like surely she's gonna pick persistence of vision or something. Or
I was close. That's an honorable mention.
Yeah, see, exactly. Like I was like, no, she's gonna pick basics over resolutions. And so okay,
we're very close.
We're running out of time anyway, so maybe it's a good thing that we both picked
yeah,
this one as our ender.
Okay, I picked Resolutions because I like half of this episode. And that seems kind of odd, but I really don't like Harry pouting around and basically cornering Tuvok into going against Janeway's orders or having a mutiny on his hands. But the whole situation of Janeway and Chakotay playing house with a monkey warms my heart, and it spawned so much fan fiction on the internet since 1996 that, honestly, come on. You were really either into that or you were not, and I know some people are not, but I was really into that. I just thought, ooh, where are they going to go with this? This is interesting. And when Basics did air, I was a little disappointed because the two stories are very disconnected. Suddenly we go from those two on a planet together to Chakotay chasing after what he thought was his baby. But this was such a... It had so much untapped potential. And instead of Resolutions, I think I need to pull a title from a Nine Inch Nails song and call it All That Could Have Been. Because, holy wow, the things, the doors that they opened, the things they could have done. I'm going to stop right now.
I think, okay, Robert Beltran would agree with you that they didn't go far enough with the episode. And he described it as, quote unquote, Star Trek romance, where he says that he's like, yeah, they touch hands and it's supposed
and
to be
sexy.
Thrilling. Yeah, it's supposed to
yeah,
be sexy.
Yeah. Yes, I've seen that interview. It's kind of tongue in cheek, but I think there's some truth in that too.
And then he flip flops a little bit later on where he realizes that the emotional depth was in the character, not so much in the action. And I'm definitely going to miss, you feel Jerry Taylor's hand in this.
Oh, definitely. It is a Janeway is awesome episode, and she writes a lot of those in the early seasons of Voyager.
And you miss that when she's gone, you know, like you
kind of do.
Yeah, and this was one of the last ones, I think, and it's clear that it was.
This was like a love letter to Captain Janeway here from Jerry Taylor herself. Yeah, for sure.
I liked the B plot a little bit more than you did. I'm not saying it's great. It was weird seeing Tuvok as captain.
Yeah, that was not working.
I just don't think he'd make a very good captain, but
no. No, I think he proved that.
I did like the whole idea of the crew banding together and saying, like, no, we're going to get our captain back, and we're going to do it no matter what. Because we're on our own, and this is what has to happen. There's no Starbase to go to. There's no HQ to talk to for advice. Like, we need to do something. And then we got to see the Doctor's Vidian girlfriend again.
Yeah, Dinara Pell. That was sweet.
Yeah, I thought that was a great callback, and it was effective, and it made sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it wasn't a Deus Ex Machina, but it was close.
it had enough sense to where it wasn't that. I think that was okay. Okay, we would be remiss if we did not mention your favorite, the monkey.
The monkey. That's probably the reason why I chose this and ended the marathon with it, because you got to end with a monkey. Because a marathon with a monkey is twice as good as it would have been without a monkey. We all know that rule.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, enough said right there. We're running short on time, and unfortunately, I wanted to tell you an alternate story idea I had for Resolutions that kind of bleeds into Basics and then becomes the season 2 finale. But you know what I think we ought to do? Because we just, there's no way we can squeeze this in. Let's do it next week. Let's rewrite Resolutions.
Yes.
What do you say?
I feel like people tend to like when we rewrite episodes or we kind of tweak them. And what better than Resolutions? Because it's something that we love, but something that is just the tip of the iceberg that we could delve into a whole lot more if we go underwater.
Oh, yeah. There's many ways that we can improve this episode. So that's what we're going to do next week. But you know what? Monkeys are not the only thing that we're talking about on Trek FM this week. Here is a glimpse at other things that you might have heard on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The unmade Starfleet Academy movie.
You know, even on paper. Okay, do we want to do the script, which was written by the guy who wrote Star Trek V, or do we want to do the script, which was written by the guy who wrote Star Trek II?
Earl Grey.
The ships of TNG.
Oh, no, it's one ship that splits into three parts, just like the D is one ship that splits into two parts. It's not a Voltron, it's one ship.
An owl formed a saucer.
The orb.
Dr. Bashir, I presume commentary.
I know that. It's just a hostile look on Sisko's face the whole time. He's just looking at Zimmerman like, all right, you're a piece of work, aren't you?
Exactly.
To the journey!
Seska.
And obviously, Seska couldn't let go.
No.
And she proved that by having his child against his will.
Yeah. Now here is the Maury Show twist of the future. He does not impregnate her. She impregnates herself with his DNA, or so she thought. But he is not the father.
The ready room.
They should.
But it's also really gloomy, and it's sad. I never want to go back there. I don't want to, like, re-experience that. Like, just the visual candy of being able to go outside and talk to the Vorta. And, wow, I maybe didn't phrase that properly. I meant the change in color and lighting.
Oh.
I did not mean, but she's a very attractive
I thought you were
Vorta.
Talking about Kimana.
She is fetching. No? She's a fetching lass.
Warp 5.
Zindi Evolution.
Well, I think maybe Okapa and Insectoid are two races that could have a life together. You know, you've got the 9-year lifespan of the Okapa. You've got the 12-year lifespan of an Insectoid. If they meet at the right time, it could be a beautiful love story.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Iris Stephen Bear's Star Trek.
And it's the first time I heard him say something that he said several times over the years is, you know, one day when we're not the middle child, we're not the stepchild, people are going to go, holy crap, look at DS9.
Literary Treks.
Slings and arrows, a sea of troubles.
You see in this book, too, that Picard is facing this melancholy because they've been worried about the Borg, and now the Dominion is on the horizon, and there's these two things, and obviously this is before First Contact, so that hasn't happened yet. And Picard seems to be kind of weighed down in this story in some ways.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows. You can find us on any platform. We are on Stitcher, iTunes, Xbox, Zune, Windows Phone. We are on the website, of course. You can just go to trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. Download all the episodes there. And before we go, let's hear a little word from our sponsor. Tristan, take it away.
Our sponsor for this show is audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week.
From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank you and Audible for supporting To The Journey and Trek.fm.
I love our marathons, and I'm looking forward to Season 3, but I'm looking forward to even more is rewriting resolutions, because we haven't done that for a while, and I think that's going to be a good time.
Yep, it's time to bring it back, and yeah, again, I think we're going to have a lot of fun with that, for sure.
We will see you next week, and this has been To The Journey!
To the Journey!